Get into our seeds teaching today, and if I'm honest with you, I really want to take my time today, and I always feel the pressure, well aware of the clock and lunch and all of those things, but this word has just been so full, and I feel full from my study this week and just preparing. What I feel like the Lord wanted to teach us today, and what He wants to say to us. But the series is slowing down, but because we've planted seeds, this does not end. We've been in this series for the better of, I don't know, almost 2 months now. We've been in this campaign, and it's been big for us. It's been, I think, our largest small group sign up and people connected. And I know the group I'm leading, it's as many this past Wednesday as the first Wednesday. And that doesn't always happen in small groups. Sometimes they fall off and people get busy or lose interest. But people have remained connected because this is speaking to us. And I want so bad, as we're coming to a close, I want so bad to narrow all of this teaching down to one or two sticky statements that stay with us, but that's proving hard to do. I know the key is this. If we want to live our lives with wisdom and if we want to have an understanding about all things, then we understand that everything follows this. We reap what we sow. It's the law of the harvest. That's the law of seeds. We reap what we sow. We reap more than we sow. And we reap long after we sow. And I hope one of the things that has happened or switched in your mind and in your spirit is that when you hear you reap what you sow, your mind doesn't automatically think the negative. Because that's the way that's been presented to us. Most of our lives, you know, somebody, you know, trips on the side. Well, you just reaping, you know. You probably laughed at somebody that tripped, and now you tripping, you know. We just always heard that in a negative context. Now the word of the day is karma. That's just karma, you know. Somebody's reaping, and it's always attached to the negative. But I want you to understand today that our thoughts, our actions, our reactions, our posts on social media, our conversations, the way we raise our kids, the way we handle our resources, the choices we make, and most importantly, what we do with our time, even how we handle our faith, all of these things will have a huge impact on our lives now and 30 years from now. You know why? Because tomorrow starts today. That's the tagline we've been using in this series, and I'm just struck by how true it is. I'm struck by how much that statement has come to life in my spirit. And I would say that we have to live knowing we can't change the past. I think there's a lot of people, again, you reap what you sow. You feel like you are reaping seeds that you sowed in younger years or, you know, less wise times or, when you know better, you do better. And some of you just started knowing better. You just started living better. You just started walking better and thinking better. And you feel like, man, I've got a lot to pay for because I spent so many years in dysfunction, or I spent so many years living outside of God's plan or God's wisdom. There's nothing you can do to change the past. I can't undo the seeds that I have sown. There's always a harvest coming, for better or for worse. All I can do is think, from this day forward, I am going to sow better seed. And if you start today, or if you started 8 weeks ago, or you started last week, or you jumped in a couple of weeks ago and you started planting better seed, don't feel like your good seed is going to be snuffed out by the bad seed. No. That's why we're taking care of our soil. That's why we are keeping our hearts right. And I'm not going to get it perfect, and you're not going to get it perfect, but I'm going to do my best to really lean into this, because it has the power to change everything in my life. If I plant good seed, if my tomorrow starts with what I do today, then you know what? It's going to change my family. It's going to change my marriage. It may impact my career. It'll affect my finances and my future. And of course, it is going to affect my own legacy. Legacy is where I want us to land today. So I don't want to be in a hurry. I want to talk for a few moments. Legacy, it's on the screen, but legacy is the ongoing, lasting impact of my life after I am gone. If you're young, you're not thinking about legacy. If you have some gray hairs, whether they're colored or not, if you have some years, if you have some season on you, then you think about legacy. I am 52, and so I'm thinking about legacy. I'm thinking about what I have passed on to my children. I've not been well the last few days. My daughter moved to Washington, D.C. this week. And it's, I don't know, she has traveled all over the world by herself. I have dropped her at more airports and waved goodbye to her in more situations. But this has messed your boy up. And I'm not well, so pray for me. But she starts a dream career tomorrow morning, and I'm so proud of her, and I'm so excited. It's what she's always wanted to do and what she's always prayed to do. And if you're watching today, I love you, baby girl, and I'll be to see you real soon. But I think about legacy. I think about legacy at this stage of my life. Legacy is the ripples your life keeps sending out even when you're no longer here. So that's what I want us to finish with. There's this life exercise. Counselors use this. Life coaches use this exercise. Wise people that are trying to help others make the most of their lives. They will ask this question to those who are seeking their advice and counsel. They will ask, what do you want your funeral to look like? Not that you're excited about dying, not that, you know, you're ready for it to happen soon. No, but what do you want your funeral to look like? What impact would you like your life to have at the end? Funerals are fascinating to me. I go to funerals, and they interest me. Every single funeral I'm a part of, I can't help but think about my own. Will anyone come to my funeral? Which is ultimately asking, have I made a difference in anyone's life? Have I impacted anyone? Have I helped anyone that they would want to come and pay final respects to me? Your eulogy, because these counselors, these life coaches, I've been asked this in counseling and in coaching, they will sometimes ask those that they're trying to help to write their own eulogy. I know that sounds a little morbid, but it's not. The eulogy is the part of the funeral service where someone comes up and attempts to tell your story. It's the way someone who knows you well tries to explain the impact of your life. It's kind of tradition in Georgia, in the Deep South, to have open remarks at a funeral. I have hosted these many, many times, and you know, we say on the program that you only have 2 minutes, and I've seen this go just about every kind of way. But if you're ever at a funeral that I'm in charge of and we open up the mic, just know the pastor is sweating somewhere because it's unnerving. You don't know what people are going to say, and I guess because I've experienced the run the gamut of comments. I've had to take the mic away from some. That's too much eulogy, sir. You cannot tell all of that in public. Save that for the repast, and in fact, don't even tell it there. But there's been a few times at funerals where no one came forward to say anything. And there's been times where I have heard people say things that were not nice or kind at all. The reality is that someday someone is going to stand in front of a group of people. It might be a large crowd. It may be a small gathering. But someday someone is going to stand up next to your box or your vase or your picture, and they are going to tell your story. Here's my question. What do you hope they will say? What do you hope they will say? In light of the life you have lived, what do you want someone to say about you? It's legacy. And I know we don't tend to think about our lives 10 or 20 or 30 years from now. But what about the legacy that we are going to leave behind? That is seeds, ladies and gentlemen. What you're doing today is going to impact tomorrow. The choices you're making today, choices you made this last week, the choices you are going to make this week. And you say, Pastor Darrell, that just sounds so serious, and it just sits a little heavy on my mind. And I get it. Some of you are thinking, no, nobody's got time for that. I'm just trying to get through this week, and it's only Sunday. I'm just out here trying to survive. That's as far ahead as I can possibly think. Just survive today. And I get it. There's no judgment. I understand the pressure and the emotion and just what some weeks do and what some seasons do. But there is serious wisdom in realizing that tomorrow starts today. And I need to go a little further into this to make sure that you understand that we live in a culture that resists this kind of thinking. because everything in the culture right now is instant. We've got Amazon Prime now. We order it before 10 a.m. and somehow it arrives by 4 in the afternoon. We live in an instant culture. We live in the right now and the immediacy. We live in the moment, and living in the moment, it gets in the way of thinking long term. And yet we know that we reap what we sow, but we reap it oftentimes long after we've sown it. That's why the ancient ways of the Lord do not agree with the craziness of the culture. They're always at odds. And the things of God are countercultural to the world, meaning they are opposite. They are opposite the ways of the world or the thinking of the world. I meet people all the time, counseling, in the aisles of the church, in the lobby, just, you know, hey, I've come to church 2 Sundays and I'm frustrated that everything in my life is not fixed yet. Well, you spent 25 years making a mess. Can you give him 25 Sundays? It's not that there isn't a way out of it. The process is just not always instantaneous. It's not always immediate. I know the preacher on TV is telling you that if you will send those few dollars, that it's going to happen today. But I got to answer to God for what I say every Sunday in this pulpit. And so I need to tell you that some things take time. I need to tell you that some things are a process, and they evolve, and they unfold, and they become, and they mature, and they get better. And the longer you are consistent, if you plant the seed, and if you nurture the soil, and if you add the water, and then you wait, and then you wait. Sometimes it feels like we're waiting a long time. And I know this kind of instant culture is getting in the way of living a life with wisdom, because our world is immediate and our world is instant. So we live in today not thinking about the fact that I want to invest. I want to invest today so that it will affect my tomorrow. I have to think in terms of legacy. And I realize it all happens so fast. Happens so fast. Again, if you're friends with any of these folks here that have some years on them, they're going to tell you life, the wise man was right. It's a vapor. It happens so fast. I was just 20 years old. It feels like a few days ago. I was just a teenager just a minute ago. And now middle age, now some season, elder season of life. It happens so fast. Look what Moses said in Psalm 90, verses 4, 5, and 6. He said, 1,000 years in your sight are like a day that has just gone by. 1,000 years, it's gone just like that. Or like a watch in the night. Yet you sweep people away in the sleep of death. They are like the new grass of the morning. In the morning it springs up new, but by evening it is dry and withered. He said it seems like it all happened just on one day. It just, here it was and there it went. In other words, we are short, God is long. What do you mean? It's a contrast between the brevity of life and the eternality of God. And this kind of realism about our weakness and about His strength is the necessary foundation of true wisdom. Here's the idea that I need to leave you with today. If If your hope is in something that dies with you, then you have no lasting hope. If your legacy is built on things that die with you, then you have no legacy. I asked the men in our small group on Wednesday, opened with a question that nearly took all of our allotted time, but it was powerful and awesome to hear their answers. The question was something along the lines of, what is the first thing you remember receiving or being given that you knew was valuable? I mean, it was given to you and you knew there was value. Not you're a kid and they hand you something and say, now listen, you better hold on to this. This is special, you know, and you don't understand that it's special. You don't recognize that it's valuable. So at what point in your life, at what stage of your life, how old were you, what was it when you recognized something of value has been given to me? And these men, they're just amazing humans, and I'm so honored to do life with them. But they begin to share things that they were given, whether things of value, objects and things of value, or wisdom that was shared to them and passed down to them. And it was beautiful to hear valuable things that have been given to us. Those are the things that we carry on. Those are the things that we pass down. Those are the things that we share with others, because our legacy is not something that dies with us. It's not money that our kids are going to spend. It's not houses, you know, that someone's going to live. What's the legacy? What's the legacy that I'm leaving behind? And the good news is that because we hope in a God who outlives us, then we have hope that will outlive us as well. And when we work with God the way He works, it's important, then we can have a legacy that ripples on long after we are gone. We are short. God is long. He is eternal. Therefore, our hope and our legacy can last. What do you want people to say at your funeral? That question is going to haunt you this week. It may challenge you this week. It may sit with you for the next few days, and I hope you grapple with it and you think about it and you process it, because answering that question is going to determine how you live your life. And then Moses makes this magnificent statement. Psalm 90 and verse 12, he said, teach us to number our days that we may gain a heart of wisdom. Teach us to number. Everybody all right today? You okay? Teach us to number our days. That means to value each day as a seed and realize the brevity of this life. Because those who have learned to number their days, they spend them in pursuit of wisdom and goodness and the kingdom of God. When you number your days, you don't want one of them to be wasted. That doesn't mean you don't have slow days. That doesn't mean you don't have vacation days. That doesn't mean you don't have days where, you know, you just stay in your PJs and just relax. No, you've numbered your days. You're not wasting it. Something of value is happening, and you want to make sure, hey, today, what have I deposited into my kids today? What have I said to my spouse today? What have I accomplished? When I get to the end of this day, and there's going to be days. I have those days where I lie in bed at night and think, "Wow, I didn't get enough done today," or I did. I had that on my list and I didn't get to it. I didn't. you know, and you feel like, man, I wasted time, or I zigged and should have zagged, or I sloughed off when I should have remained focused. I'm not trying to judge any one of us, because we all have that. But that feeling of accomplishing something, that feeling of making something happen and doing good for someone else, it is addictive. And you feel that, and it's like, man, I don't want to go a day that I don't make a difference in someone's life. No matter how incremental that difference is, no matter how small that difference is, I don't want to go a day without blessing someone with a kind word, with a smile, with a hug, with some good counsel. Just in some way, I want to make a difference in someone else's life. I can only do that if I number my days and realize that I only have so many. And the truth is, none of us know how many of them we have. We don't know. We don't know how many of them we have. So we have to value each one of them. People who number their days are seeking first the kingdom of God. And here's the hard truth. We'll never learn this lesson unless we slow down and allow the Lord to bring this into focus in our lives. We just won't. So Moses prays, teach us to number our days. He's asking us, he's charging us to be more concerned with living well than living long. Living well is more valuable than living long. More days not wasted are better than a bunch of days that were wasted that accomplished nothing. And living well and living rightly and living with the end in mind, that causes us to make good decisions and good choices, causes us to live with a heart of wisdom. John Piper said, I have found that there are few things more revolutionizing than few things more revolutionizing for my life than periodic pondering of my own death. It's a little crazy, I know, but it's exactly what Moses is suggesting. That we don't focus on trying to make it through our days, but that we live in light of eternity. That we sow seeds in light of eternity. That we understand our days are numbered. Understanding that helps us to live more purposefully. Making choices that align with our eternal values rather than temporary pleasures. And we want to live well. Most of us want to leave a lasting legacy. We want to leave behind some kind of legacy. The question is, what kind? What kind of legacy do we want to leave behind? What are we investing today? What are we sowing today that you will care about, like really care about, 30 years from now? You may not realize it right now, but you're going to leave a legacy to your kids, to your grandkids. And in order to do that, we have to connect our lives with something that will outlive us. Give me just another moment today. I want to talk to you about one last seed. We've talked about multiplication seeds and transformation seeds and credible seeds throughout this series. But in John 15, Jesus gathers his disciples one last time to give them his last words. This is what I need you to remember. This is legacy, disciples. John 15, verses 1 through 4. I am the true vine. And my Father is the gardener. He cuts off every branch in me that bears no fruit, while every branch that does bear fruit, he prunes so that it will be even more fruitful. You are already clean because of the word I have spoken to you. Remain in me, verse 4 says, as I also remain in you. No branch can bear fruit by itself. It must remain in the vine. Neither can you bear fruit unless you remain in me. And then look at verse 16. He said, you did not choose me, but I chose you and appointed you so that you might go and bear fruit. Fruit that will last. And so that whatever you ask in my name, the Father will give you. You hear the legacy talk in those verses. He said, fruit that will remain. It's only going to come from abiding or remaining in Jesus. Because your legacy is the fruit that will remain. It's the part of you that's going to last forever. And every person chooses what their legacy is going to be with the seeds that we plant every day. What's interesting to me, what's also true of me, is that we will spend most of our time and energy worrying about, and stressing about, and fighting about things that will not remain. And we often forget and lose focus on the eternal things. I don't know about you, but something in this series the last few weeks have made me want to have more purposeful conversations. Not waste time in foolishness. Not chase things that don't want to be caught. But to make sure that I'm focused on what matters now and what's going to matter then. And so Jesus essentially says in these verses, your success is only as sustainable as its source. Think about that for just a moment. I'm coming to a close, but he's saying if you're succeeding in some area of your life, what's the source of that success? Because success is only as sustainable as its source. It's the point Jesus is making in this passage. No fruit can be greater than the vine that produced it. It's true in agriculture. It's just true in our lives. It's not sustainable if it's not connected to the vine. Sustainable is it's a trendy word right now. We talk about sustainable energy, and they talk about sustainable farming and sustainable lifestyles. But Jesus, always ahead of his time, is talking about sustainable living, sustainable faith, sustainable spirituality, sustainable success. Lasting success in life depends on deep roots that support it. The source has to be good for lasting success. This is why Jesus keeps saying to remain in him, to stay consistent in him. That one who's coming out of trial and struggle, that one who's coming out of difficulty, that one who's coming out of life pain and heart issues, and you're wondering why it's not turned and why it all hasn't fixed yet and resolved yet. If you can just let your roots grow deep, because we said it weeks ago in this series, what's happening initially is happening in areas that you can't see. It's the roots that are developing and diving deep and digging in and attaching themselves and grounding themselves and moving down into the earth to establish you long before that seed ever begins to sprout, or that flower ever begins to blossom, or that little sprig or twig ever pops its head up on this side of the dirt. The roots have already established themselves, and you may not be seeing the results of your spirituality yet. You may not be seeing the evidence of your commitments that you've made yet, but you got to know that something is happening down in the ground. Something's happening to your feet. They're getting planted, and spiritual roots are digging deep. Why? Because he said the wind is going to blow and the rain is going to come, but if I can get your roots established, you may be blown side to side, but you will not be uprooted, because I have established your roots. Lasting success depends on deep roots. So Jesus says, you got to remain in me. You got to be consistent. When every circumstance of life is telling you to run, let me just give you some real simple counsel. When everything in your heart, your mind, when everything's telling you to run, that's not God. Because God doesn't tell you to run. God tells you to plant. God tells you to say, he says, remain. He says, hold on. So you got to beat the devil at his own game. Run. Why would I run? I'm not running. I'm not, you can't chase me out of this. That's why Terrence will ask, Rebecca, how are you feeling? I don't know if it's because down in his heart, he was thinking, if she's out, I'm out. If she's scared, I'm scared. No, I have a feeling Terrence, man of faith. Where you at? Oh, it took me a minute. I had to shed a few tears. I wrung my hands at least 1,000 times. Bit these nails to the quick. But I came to the realization that all of this detour, delay, all of that is a distraction. The trouble has only strengthened my resolve. The hell, the crisis, the wind and the wave, that's only renewed my faith that God has a plan for my life. I'm going to tell you something, ladies and gentlemen. That is spiritual maturity. That's when you know, all right, we got something here. This is working. My roots. I'm connected to something bigger than me. My source is good. Listen, if you've made a commitment to the Lord, your source is good. I say this in love to every person who feels like God has failed you, that God has disappointed you. Don't fall for the trick of the enemy, because he wants you to blame God for every result of sin and lack of wisdom in our lives. He wants us to blame, well, if there was a God, he wouldn't allow this to happen to me. There is a God, and it happened. But cursing God is not going to accomplish anything. Remaining faithful to God and choosing him in spite of my emotion that wants to cry out in anger toward him. I was scared to death. I came up in the church. They were serious about questioning God. They taught us, you may fall down dead if you question God. And I don't know, it was a great day in my life when I realized that God was big enough and loved me enough that he could handle my questions. And he wasn't looking to squash me with his thumb just because I had a bad day and was, Lord, why is this happening? I got over there and read David. Lord, I nearly slipped and tripped when I saw the prosperity of the wicked and saw them just getting richer and richer and moving into bigger and better. And I'm over here struggling. Foot was slipping all kind of ways. But David went on to say, after I've looked a while, they're not still living in that same house. They're not still married to that same person. They used to drive a Bentley, now they're in a Corolla. What? All I know, Lord, is I've never seen the righteous forsaken. And I've never seen his seed begging bread. Can we hold on just a little longer? Can we stay at this just a little longer? Can we wait until he shows us his glory? Jesus said, I am the true vine. It dawns on me that if there is a true vine, there must be a fake vine also. There's a restaurant around here that we go into, and every time we go in, PK is amazed. They've got these flowers, plants that look so real. Like it's the best fakes I've ever seen. To the point that Kristen kept saying, those are fake. And I said, they're not fake. Those are real. Those are, I can smell them. Your mind will mess with you when you want to believe something. She said, no, they're fake. I'm going to go over there and stick my finger in that pot. And it's going to come up with dirt. No. Best fakes I've ever seen. And the world, there's a lot of fake in this world, and it's growing by the day. Fake it till you make it, they said, but not many are making it because they're not connected to the source. The source, what we felt in this house today, is the source. And here's what I know. Nobody texted me before church. Nobody emailed me. Nobody caught me in the lobby and told me. But here's what I know. There was probably a dozen people that came to church anyway today. Meaning you didn't want to. You didn't feel like it. Because life has been lifing and people have been peopling. But you came anyway. And the Lord said, hold that message, preacher. Give me just a minute to work. Because I got to remind somebody that they're only as good as their source. Their success is only as sustainable as their... I need to remind somebody who their source is. I need to let my glory fall for a few moments. Because probably a dozen people that came anyway. Right now you're sitting there like, you know what? I think I can make it one more week. I think I can finish March. I know April's coming. All the bills gonna be due on the first. Now, I don't know how it's all gonna work, but I think I can hold on. And you know what I know about God? Somewhere between now and then, he's gonna come with a little more. And he's gonna bless you with a little more. How I show me your glory, my heart, flesh cry. Show me your glory. Say how deep. Said, I am the true vine, my Father is the gardener. This is what you got to know. It's what he said about his Father. He said he cuts things, he prunes things, he removes dead things because dead things hinder good growth. Some of what you've been feeling in life, mad at the devil, but it's the gardener. I need to do some pruning in your life. I need to cut some things away. Just allow me. I promise you, I won't hurt you. You're going to think it is at first. You're going to think this subtraction is going to be too much, but you just wait until next season. You just wait until I water what I've cut. You just wait until I bless what I've pruned. You're going to grow taller and stronger, and you're going to be better. Because the Lord is the gardener. He's the gardener. You see, what I've learned is we like genie God much better than we like gardener God. Genie God is like Siri or Alexa. Alexa, turn on these lights. Hey, Siri, my phone, trying to answer something. But see, Gardener God, he's got a plan for us. Got a plan. The pot you're living in, sir, the pot you're living in, ma'am, is too small. I need to re-pot you. I need to re-home you. I need to move you. I need to transition. I need to do some work in your life. I say, Lord, as long as I'm connected, you do whatever you need to do.